This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this after show. I will start with what I did yesterday, which is, so yesterday I was at RecGen headquarters, the Zane Robe RecGen headquarters, which...
For a model shoot?
No. That was last week. But they... So during the pandemic, they moved their office and now they're in the process. They bought a warehouse and they're refurbing it like completely there. So just build it out. Mm. They're kind of renting space at the moment with this other apparel company. Anyway, so I was with Luke and we're talking about RecGen and what's coming up. Firstly, he wanted to extend an apology to people that tried to buy a lot of stuff, but they ordered the wrong included.
The mediums were gone.
Yeah, they just ran out of all the popular sizes. Yeah, he said he should have known better and they stocked up popular sizes. So there'll be obviously a restock. There will be new kit and new styles. And yeah, obviously all the classics like stocked up properly in the popular sizes coming in a month or so from now. So he reckons like towards mid-Feb or end of Feb.
I always wonder what it's like to be an extreme person because I'm like middle of the ground. I'm always like ordering mediums, 32 waist or whatever, 34 waist. And I'm like...
You mean what it's like to be me?
Yeah, just like always ordering on the boundaries, never out of stock.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel with shoes. It's like 13. It's always the last shoe you can buy.
Yeah,
I was like,
true.
If I was
I have big feet. I'm more in the extreme.
Though. I was like, if I was 14, no shoes. But if because what
I'm 12. No, they've always got 12.
Always got 12. But 13s is what everyone stocks up to. Mm. So if you're 13 and a half or 14, you're honestly fucked.
See, so you have to
13
go, like,
is always the biggest size. Unless you're Nike. Nike always stock up to like 15 or 16. But outside of Nike, you can't really get more than that. Yeah. So some brands stop at 12 as well, 12 US. So, but anyway, so I was talking to Luke and we were talking about the fabrics and there was some issues with obviously some of the screen printing on some of the rec stuff didn't quite go that well.
Yeah, like I've seen it on other people's, like the writing falls off, right?
So he wanted to extend his apologies about that sort of stuff and they're kind of learning and, you know, it's their first kind of run and stuff, but they've fixed all the mistakes. I've seen all the new kit and like they've, you know, changed the manufacturing and the printing and they've got it all sorted and now it's super solid. Like it looks, it's way, way nicer. It's way better.
The material is the same, right? The material has always been solid.
Yeah, yeah. The fabrics, yeah. But what's crazy, right, is... So we're going to get Luke on to talk about some of the technology in the clothes, but because, you know, we don't do as good of a job of it and he'll talk about it for days on end. But what's crazy about, or what I love so much about what's coming out for rec is like, because obviously all the rec stuff, even though it's in-gym stuff, it's a little bit nicer, right? You can wear it. It's a bit more Lululemon. You can wear it out. But they're actually doing a streetwear version of Rec. So they'll have a full line.
But don't they already have Zanarobe?
They do, but they're now they're doing... Because Zanarobe and RecGen have very different markets. So Zanarobe is mostly US, Canada. And they want to bring like a... Because RecGen's mostly Aussie. So they want to bring like a...
Also, RecGen is overseas quite a lot.
No, Zanarobe.
Sorry, Zanarobe is overseas.
Yeah, mostly overseas. Oh, okay. Yeah. Australian sales in Zanarobe is very small.
Right.
But anyway, the point is that RecGen will now offer a... streetwear line and they'll offer an in-gym line that they're doing at the moment. And the streetwear line, what I'm excited about is we'll do some locker room prints on it. Now, I put up a story earlier this week about locker room stickers and apparel and stuff like that and said, who wants it? And as a lot of people said yes. We can't actually get them to people that don't actually go to the gym at the moment. However, in the future... Once the gym is full, we'll start to push the products out into the public. But for now, unfortunately, if you see a locker room branded kit, that is for only people that either work at the gym, super, super inner circle, close friends, or clients of the gym at this stage. So sorry for the teaser. That was probably a bit rude of me, but I just wanted to see who was interested. But you should check out the Locker Room Gym Instagram because we are now putting up our first official post on it. So we're starting to leak out some of the construction photos so you guys can see the progress of the construction in sort of like a really high quality format. So they're sick photos. Mm. Yeah, we're pumped for those photos. Okay, so a lot went on this week in the sort of tech world, which we want to share our opinions on. But I guess maybe the best way to start, Raf, is because you... You obviously read the news firsthand. I heard some sort of third-hand comments about it through Sam Harris's podcast about some of the tech stuff, but why don't you kind of run through the different current events that started and we'll share what we think.
Well, yeah, it was a big week. I think it's happened over the last few weeks. We haven't discussed it yet. Probably the most close to home one was Pete Evans' podcast got taken down on Spotify. Just the employees. They're just like, hey, take that shit down.
The employees of Pete Evans took it down.
Sorry, the employees of Spotify.
Okay, yeah.
They were like, they were over it, they're out. And then basically the podcast disappears at that point, right? Because no one's going to go to someone's website to find like the...
Is it off Apple as well?
Yeah, it's gone. It's pretty much gone everywhere from what I could see. But you can still... I think he's hosting it like somewhere, right? So you can access it, but it just goes away from like the public domain.
Yeah.
If you use WhatsApp, we're pretty big WhatsApp users. We use it for the gym and we use it just like personally as well in heaps of groups. If everybody that used WhatsApp got a terms of service update, which wasn't like... People say, hey, it wasn't like they're like reading your messages and doing whatever they want.
Is it Evolve with Pete Evans?
Yeah, I think that's the show. Oh, I'm not sure. It's just like they say it's his podcast, Pete Evans' show. I'm not sure if he has like multiple. I'm pretty sure it's his main show that they got rid of. So the terms of service update was really just around like, man, now they can, you know, use WhatsApp for their ad services. So businesses can message you and they can track, hey, like after the someone messages, you go somewhere else, you buy it, all that type of stuff. Similar to what they do on their regular website, right? And I can't remember how many they lost, but they lost like millions and millions of users of WhatsApp basically in a second at that point. And then the battle between Facebook and Apple kind of intensified. And right now, when you use the Facebook app, say on your phone all the time, you got off it and it still tracks like where you end up going and what you end up buying. And now Apple is going to ask you every time, hey, do you want them to still track you? Presumably, nearly everybody's going to say no.
Well, every time you open the app?
Every time you're like on Facebook and Instagram, right? Then you see an ad, they can track it after you go off that to see what you go buy and you know, see if the ads are effective. Whereas now you can say like yes to always, like you can say yes, allow forever. Or you can say yes, allow once.
Yeah.
Or you can say flat no.
Yeah.
Right, it's obviously going to cost billions of dollars to Facebook. I don't know, absolutely extreme
amount. Advertising money. Yeah.
This huge revenue losses. They spend millions of dollars to show you how much it's worth to them. They're already spending millions of dollars advertising just to convince people that it's a bad idea. With the claim that it's going to really hurt small businesses, which definitely there's some truth to, right? If we run an ad for the gym at Creature,
definitely.
And the ads don't work as well, it could hurt us. But in the long run here, it's not like we can't survive without that shit, right? Like, we've had small businesses before Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because obviously we have an e-commerce side of our business and we use advertising to sell programs. And it's like, so I was in Manly yesterday and we were sitting at this cafe eating a sandwich, me and Connor and our producer, and this guy is in the cafe, this young guy. He walks up to us and he's like, I love Project Body. I've been on it for 6 months.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, sick. And that's, I feel like a program is making a difference to someone's life. It's like so good. Like I'm doing rugby at the same time and I'm not overtraining and it's like, it's making me feel like I'm making progress in the gym whilst also making, you know, being able to show up for rugby games and all that sort of stuff. I was like, that's sick. If we lose the ability to reach more people, because in the end of the day, the consumer is a lot harder to convince these days because they're bombarded with so many messages. So the algorithms, these tracking, allows you to put your content, your message in front of more people. I guess if you weren't doing that, there'd just be more of a guessing game. It'd just be less accurate. You'd be trying to guess who your customer is a bit more rather than tracking them individually exactly. So it still would work, but I guess how you would do it is rather than set all the tracking and the pixels up, you would just say, okay, advertise to people in this area, in this age group with these interests. Kind of how it started.
Yeah, so you spend a fortune less, but I think it'd be better because the truth is then you just put a lot of effort into, say, like your show. People just find it from the podcast. And if they really like it, they go buy it. Might be less people, but at least it's not a huge cut going to Facebook.
I think a lot of people would lose their job as well. Because, you would lose jobs out of it as well.
But if you remember the money that, say, you spend less money on Facebook for advertising, you can put that money somewhere else.
No, I think you would spend the same amount of money. I think you'd spend the same amount. It just would be, you'd just waste more money.
No, but if it's less effective, like spending's gone up for a reason, right? Because it's so effective.
Yeah.
If it becomes less effective, people are going to start looking for other areas to put their money.
Yeah,
you know?
It might be cheaper. Yeah, it's hard to say what will actually happen once it goes ahead in terms of people spending, but I would try and keep the same budgets and just more trial and error, to be honest. More trial and error. Yeah, just be.
But you might find somewhere else now to put your money. Totally different place.
I actually think more people would... I think people that have done it for a long time actually would be okay. I think it's the new people trying to get into it that would struggle the most because at least you can go off previous like purchase data. if you've done it for a long time, you go, okay, these are people that buy ads. These are people that purchase from us. This is where they live. This is who they are. This is what they like. And you can just keep targeting those people. Whereas if you're brand new and you don't really know and you're kind of like doing the shotgun approach to kind of eventually figure out, okay, this is my market, I think you're not going to have that ability. Your data is not going to be as accurate. So it's going to take longer and be more expensive. So I think now the entry into Facebook advertising would be a lot steeper. That's what I think it would mean. But yeah, in terms of the WhatsApp thing, I don't want ads on my WhatsApp.
So much better with that.
I'd rather pay for WhatsApp and just not get ads.
Yeah. If they had a paid version, I'd jump on it.
$5 a month or some shit.
But they're bringing the businesses into it. You know, I think that it's just the direction they go.
So where would you get ads? Would you get them in the feed, like of your chats?
Yeah, well, businesses will be able to message you, say, through WhatsApp. So businesses will like pay to use it and reach people through there.
That's going to be so annoying. Seriously. I spent all this time getting off Instagram to avoid ads, and now they're going to hit me on my fucking
same
WhatsApp.
Owner.
Yeah.
Same owner. Where are you going, bro?
Yeah, it's true. We need an alternative to WhatsApp. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure you guys can let us know what the alternative, but yeah, it would be something we go for. Interesting. So some of the comments Sam Harris was making on this, because one of the things, obviously, Trump was pulled off Twitter. He's talked about Paleo Pete Evans, who's like a celebrity chef that's absolutely lost his marbles, has been pulled off podcasting.
All the fucking Paleo's gone to his head. I don't know how you start with Paleo and end up where he ended up.
Yeah. Well, it kind of makes sense. If he's going like more ancestral, more pure, he's like, we don't need vaccines, right? So that's kind of like, I guess that's his logic. Yeah, so,
I guess so.
But anyway, lost the plot. Trump's obviously lost the plot many years ago. So now we've got this situation where, so Sam's like, in some ways, you are privatizing free speech because people are expressing themselves freely on these platforms, which are private platforms. They're not public forum. It's a public forum, but it's not publicly owned, right? So at the end of the day, they make the call. Twitter makes the call, Facebook, whatever forum, Reddit makes the call as to who can say what and who can't say what. So you got to ask yourself, what's wrong or right? You know, you've created this global monopoly in terms of where people go to express themselves, yet you still technically own it. So you do, it's in your rights to do whatever you want.
It's your business, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So no one's ever going to take away your free speech, you know, face-to-face, person-to-person, right? So if you and I are having a conversation, no one can ever censor that. So that's still there. And that's what they had in mind when they wrote the Constitution, right? The, what is this group of guys called?
Founding Fathers.
But now we're in this different era, so you wonder, okay, is this platform so big that now the rules should still apply here and they've got to let people say what they want to say? I don't know, it's hard to say. I just think because these platforms are so powerful, in a way I'm happy that someone is regulating them and someone is controlling them. Because if someone had a really bad message, right? Say, I don't know, the COVID vaccine is making people's brains fall out of their skull. Something is completely not true, right? But of course, when you're just person to person, you can express that freely. You can do whatever you want. What's the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is you spread it to like 25, 30 people, 100 people, 1,000 people at most. The power of these platforms, you can spread it to millions. And that's where it gets dangerous. So I do think that because their tech is so powerful here, it is better that someone is watching over it and regulating it and controlling it. Just because it's so powerful. You could never foreseen how powerful these platforms would be.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could just potentially hope, like, hey, the bad messages get drowned out amongst the good. But it's, I mean, they get drowned out, but the problem is you can still, like, some people can still just stay. You know, there's always going to be some people that just, they can ignore all the rest.
No, they don't get drowned out. They get siloed. So what happens is everyone that agrees with that message now silos themselves to only get that message. And they get more and more of that message and that belief system. That's the problem with it. It's the algorithms, fuck it. So anyway, so moving on from that stuff, which is, I think, interesting. I'd be curious to get some more opinions on where people think of that stuff. What I like about podcasts is, they're still unregulated as well.
Except Pete Evans got taken down.
Well, no, but he's on Apple Podcasts. I just found him. Yeah. So,
but they could still just take him down if they chose the same thing as Spotify.
But he can still get it up wherever he wants.
Yeah.
Like he still can have a website. He can still have a
unless platform. Amazon takes him down.
That's true.
Like, it's always someone that can take you down.
That's true. But in terms of it actually did happen. Remember during COVID that guy. That has that podcast, the English guy, the banker that...
He got Real.
London Real.
Yeah.
Yeah, London Real. He got taken down. Mm. Yeah, they banned him. And they took him off YouTube.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah, they took him.
And his LinkedIn got deleted.
Yeah, he ended up on ClickFunnels or something. Something random. Anyway. But one thing I was going to talk about. So obviously I've been trying to get my running up a bit more. A couple of things have been frustrating me. One, the Nike running app was really good on my watch for a while. But now, for some reason, when I go into it and I start running, the live pace that you set, so like you can look at how fast you're going at live time, it's not accurate. It's not accurate.
I don't think it's got the technology to be accurate. That's why you get it. People have GPS watches.
No, but I mean, this is connecting to the internet, though.
Yeah, I think it's not accurate enough, like in small spaces as you're moving.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Why you get a GPS watch.
Yeah.
I think it can average it really accurately, because I always like map my run. So yeah. If you like run for an hour, it can like quite, well, how long you're running and how far you went, so it can give you a really good average.
Yeah.
But like second by second as you're running.
Yeah.
I don't think it takes data points quickly enough.
Yeah.
Because they're like a GPS watch, you can usually set it to taking a data point every second or every 10 seconds. I don't know how often a phone does it, but I don't think it's that frequent.
Okay, but it was accurate for a while. It used to be really accurate. It used to track it perfectly.
Mm.
And that's just stopped tracking it really well. So now I have to finish my run to figure out what pace I'm at. But that's silly. I want to know what pace I'm at as I'm running the pace. You know what I mean? So that's been a little bit frustrating. But anyway, because I've been putting more running in, I've been now looking at my Ks over the week. I'm only getting like 15, 20 Ks in each week. There's a big difference I notice between like 5 Ks and 10 Ks. Regardless of pace, it's like how my body feels at the end of it. Going that extra 5 Ks is like, aerobically, I think it's almost easier aerobically. I find when I warm up from, you know, when I get to halfway at the 5K, the next 5 Ks gets to that like runner's high where you're running, you're putting more effort in, but it feels like it's less effort, which is kind of interesting. So I almost can run faster because it's almost like my system's warmed up, all the blood's in the right areas, like my technique is nice and smooth, that I can just increase the pace and it's not that harder. But what I notice is that by the end of 10 Ks, there are spots in my body, like my left lower back, my right Achilles, the front of my left knee, that are just so much worse than if I did 5 Ks. If I do 5 Ks, I'm going to do squats and I can do jumps and lunges and
yeah.
I feel fine. But if I do 10 Ks, even though it's easier at the time, the damage I feel afterwards is exponentially worse. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, well, it's running is like a lot of things, but it's just body breakdown. You lose body, and the more I think you put into it, people just get better and better, and like their body not breaking down as they go. I mean, I thought the crazy example was we had the Iron Cowboy on Saturday, and he was talking about, he was like, "Hey, your knees are bad because you don't run." So he's like flipping. You know, people are always like, "Oh, you know, if you run, you get bad knees." He's like, "No, you have bad knees because you don't run enough." He talks about, "Hey, like first time I did a marathon." He like went out for dinner after or something and he had to get like carried out on like a stretcher, right? No, because his knees like swelled up so much. So swollen. I think he was at like a UFC fight or something. So it's like really humiliating, right?
Right.
Because he was like macho guys there and his dude has to get like carried out.
Oh, okay.
So he like did a marathon and then he went out and his knees got so swollen, he literally said he could not walk. Had to be carried out of the venue. But like now, you know, he runs like a marathon every single day.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
After cycling, knees perfectly fine. Feel 100% healthy.
Mm.
And it is about just... Yeah, it's obviously not, you can't just like run yourself into healthy knees, but building that endurance to break down, like it basically is the game, right? Because yeah, you're not really getting that much more tired. So these guys that just can run and run and run, they're just like bulletproofed it so much and built so much resiliency and endurance that the breakdown just doesn't really come.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because the reason I'm running more is because one thing I want to do this year is run a marathon. I don't want to do like an event marathon. I got no interest in signing up and putting on a stupid bib and stuff like that. But I wanted to just do a marathon distance. I just run around Centennial just over and over again until I get there.
There's no marathon events anyway, so
yeah,
you're not like, in danger of it.
Yeah, I just want to know I can... I just want to feel what the distance feels like. I'm more...
I would disagree with the bib. I think the events are a lot more fun.
I'm sure it would be more fun,
but... It's fucking way more fun.
What interests me about a marathon is the progression through the journey of 42Ks. Like, how does my body feel? How hard does it get mentally? Just because I think it's an interesting challenge, right? And so many average people do marathons. Like I'm like, I can
lots of fat people start at the starting line. Yeah. I've seen photos of it.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm like, I can definitely do a marathon. Yeah. It's just a matter of how hard is it going to be. Like I have no hesitations about will I finish or not. And it's more just like, okay, I'll just set a pace. I don't know, 5:50, 6 minute case, and just complete it. But that what I've noticed because I'm only running 5, 10, the most I'll run is like 12, 13 Ks, is this breakdown that I'm noticing that's really severe. And so I was talking with some runners at the gym, and I think it's exactly what you said. You just like build it really slowly, like it takes time to build. That's why if you just people that do the really fast, short build-up to a marathon, it kills them so much and get so many injuries from it. They almost have like injuries take a year to recover from just because you haven't built your body up to that point. And I feel like that is what I'm slowly having to realize and do at the moment. But I'm tossing up a little bit between doing some running in like some flatter shoes, like just to mix it up, and some running shoes. Is because I think that what's happening a little bit as well is obviously when you run in a running shoe, your foot is almost like in a set position. Mm. It's almost like if your toes are bunched up, your toes are bunched up for the whole run and they're kind of just like protected and cushioned the whole time. Whereas like my lower back started hurting, and I think it's just because my foot is just not taking any of the impact. It's just going straight, bypass the foot, bypass the knee, bypass the hip, straight into the back.
You're missing a whole part of the adaptation.
Yeah. So I think that in order, when I'm building the running volume, just to balance it out, I'll still do my running shoes, but maybe one session in the week, I will do the flat shoe. Obviously, it will change my running style. Obviously, I won't be able to run as far or as fast, but I think it'll be good in terms of strength. Mm. Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Well, man, we used to play rugby against, we used to go play against like Fijians and Islanders and stuff like that. And even when you'd go over there, you would play in metal studs and they would play in bare feet, right?
That's
the same game, which is absolutely nuts. But obviously, when they get older, they play in boots. But part of the reason people say they're so good is because like their feet are so strong.
Mm.
So you still put the boots on eventually, right? And you're always better in the boots, or
right,
running shoes or whatever. But going in, like putting something super strong with super just good awareness into a shoe is like the next level, right? It's because they haven't worn them growing up. It's even better.
It's almost like if I was to do a deadlift, a really, really heavy deadlift, I'd imagine towards the end of the cycle, a lot of your deadlifting would be with straps and a belt, you know, because you're pushing the weight so much.
But the later you do it.
Yeah, but you still want sessions in there each week without a belt and without assistance, without straps, you know. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it. So I think I want to mix in some of that stuff just so I'm getting the conditioning through my shins and my calves. Obviously, take the volume way back, take the pace way back, but just literally like almost like the strength training version of running for my feet. So I'm gonna mix that in and
the I reckon the surfaces is huge as well. If you can take that and then take them onto like the kind of more like trail run or whatever, so you get like the different surfaces and like different angles, it like just exacerbates, you get even more benefit.
That's why I see so many of the really good runners at the park not running on the cement. I think because they're trying to get the volume in, but they know if they put too much volume on the cement, it's going to get them injured.
It's harsher.
Yeah, so there's like a really nice kind of dirt track that just kind of mimics the edge of the cement track, and I think a lot of the best runners are always on that. Yeah, that's just easier on their body, right? So that's interesting. Yeah, I'll see how that plays out. Now, yesterday, I also Connor, what was the video that you were telling me about with the McDonald's? Who are the guys? KSI and some.
Sidemen.
So it's some video on YouTube. I haven't watched it. What, Sidemen McDonald's comparison or something like that on YouTube? Anyway, so one of the things that was interesting we were talking about was the calorie difference in the same item between the US and the UK is different. Obviously, you can probably guess which one has more calories. The US, right? So like quarter pound in the US, quarter pounder in the UK, not the same amount of calories, right?
Really?
Yeah.
How different?
I think it's like 10% maybe.
Wow.
15%. I don't know. Pretty can't remember exactly. Yeah. But one of the other things is obviously the sizes as well. But the sizes in the US...
It's meant to be a quarter pounder.
No, for drinks.
Oh, okay.
For drinks, yeah. So a large in the US is how many mils, do you think?
Oh.
No, start with the UK. How many mils do you think large, like, hey, let's get a large soda with my meal.
600.
500.
Yep.
And then what do you think is the US?
750.
1 liter.
Fuck. It was double.
Double, dude.
Holy
but
shit.
But 1 liter. So much liquid. Right? So one of the things was...
Fuck.
The ingredients in the fries, right, in the UK was like potato, like mostly potatoes. It was like sesame oil and like, I don't know, some vegetable gum stabilizer, right? Dude, how many ingredients do you think there were in the US fries? Like how many total ingredients? There was 3 in the UK fries.
10?
25.
Fuck.
25.
What are they putting in it?
There's a tiny bit of potato in there. They like put the potato in by accident.
What do you think the taste is like? Do you think the American one is nicer?
I think it would taste pretty similar, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I just think it's
because
just,
you know what? It has to be pretty similar because I've been around the world. I've had McDonald's.
Yeah, it tastes pretty
similar.
I've had
McDonald's in both countries. I was never like, what is this?
But that's why it's so deceptive. And obviously, it's got more calories in it, right? So it's just absolutely crazy. But one of the other things that was mental as well was, the thick shake. Dude, the thick shake in America, right, is chocolate thick shake is 1 liter and it's the equivalent to like 2 quarter pounders and a large fries, bro.
A chocolate shake in America is 840 calories, as much as 2 cheeseburgers and a hamburger.
That is absolutely crazy. Dude, you just murder the shakes. Murder the shakes. That's where I reckon a lot of the problem lies, is in the liquid calories. Because liquid calories, the difference between liquid calories and food calories, besides the obvious stuff, is that it's so convenient, so easy.
Yeah.
So it's like you can drink it walking down the street. You can drink it like in your car. You know, you kind of can.
Man, I get drinks now just to not wear a mask when I have to.
Yeah.
Just an excuse.
Yeah, it's like so easy. And if your liquid calories, I mean, what's a common liquid calorie in Sydney? It's like kombucha. It's like 64 calories in the whole thing. I walk around and drink those all day. Not a problem at all. If your normal liquid calories is 1 liter soda, right, you're putting down like 600 calories, 500-600 calories. Imagine drinking an excess 500 or 600 calories every single day. Get pretty fat.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One Big Mac meal with a chocolate shake is 1,870 calories.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous for one meal. That makes no sense. I was thinking, you know, we should have done the 10,000 calorie challenge in America.
It'd be so easy.
So easy.
Bro, I think some days we were like 2/3 of the way there. Just doing a challenge.
It's so easy, bro.
Because we had that night when we went to In-N-Out, I told before, we did In-N-Out after a long day of podcasting. We'd eaten like plenty of other food as well.
Yeah, this is in 2016, right?
But we went and we had 2,300 calories each.
Yes.
No drinks. So if we topped one of their drinks on top of that would have been 3,000.
And it was only like 2 burgers.
Man, it wasn't that much, man.
Fries. It was 2 burgers, 2 fries.
Yeah, 2 burgers. But the burgers were not big. Like, it wasn't a stupidly sized meal.
Smashed.
Like, everyone else there was like, oh, you boys having a light dinner.
Yeah.
Fitness freaks.
You healthy like motherfuckers.
Skipping the shake.
Only 2 burgers and a water. Degenerates. So yeah. One of the things I was actually having, back to the flat versus the squishy shoes, is I was at the dinner table and we were talking about some of the running stuff with some friends of mine. And, you know, they were talking about your shoe game. It came up in conversation. They're like, Raph always wears...
the envy of everyone.
Yeah, that's what they said. They're like, Raph always wears flat shoes.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, because they're more comfortable. And they're like, no, before I said they're more comfortable, I'm like, yeah, because they're better for your feet.
Yeah.
And they go, what? They go, but aren't his feet like uncomfortable all day because he's got no support? And it's so funny because obviously...
So much more comfortable.
Yeah. So from our perspective, even I know with all the squishy shoes I wear, I'm like, it's still way more comfortable to put on a pair of Vans, right? Yeah. Or put on like bare shoes or whatever. And I'm just saying, yeah, but obviously the most comfortable is like bare feet, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. It's like, no, yeah. Yes. When you have no shoes on, barefoot, they're like, that's not the most comfortable. No, the most comfortable is like a Nike supported running shoe. And it was an interesting conversation because what you realize is the conditioning, the pre-programming from consumerism is that squishy supported shoes are better for your feet.
Mm.
Whereas like, no, your feet are better for your feet.
Well, I also think they've just got so used to it now.
That's what I mean.
If you think like putting on really squishy, narrow shoes is more comfortable, you're fucked.
Yeah, if you put on a pair of Converse and you're like, oh, these are the most comfortable shoes ever, you have destroyed your feet.
Yes.
It's official. So yeah, even I am, like I obviously wear more shoes that are more squishy, but I try and limit it as much as I can, just because I know it's just not the most comfortable thing for my feet. Your toes get more cramped and stuff. Now, even I notice sometimes that like my second outside toe, whatever the fuck that toe's called, not the pinky toe.
I have no clue.
Yeah, the ring toe.
I think you put rings on your toes.
Bro, people wear ring toes. Rings on their toes. Even that in some shoes, because it seems to be the one that kind of hits the edge of the shoe, it goes numb. Like it goes, yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but it starts to go a bit
well,
numb.
Well, I know for sure my feet have got wider since just wearing like barefoot for so long. Because now, even if I put on like a pair of Vans, like that outside toe of mine starts hurting after a few hours.
Yeah.
Which is like not like intolerable, but I'm like, oh, it's like getting sore.
Yeah.
Right? But it never used to. I used to wear them growing up. It's like,
yeah.
Never had that. I never thought about it once before this. You know, I just wore shoes.
Yeah. I mean, the solution is you could always go up a size or half a size to avoid that. But then it's like ridiculous. Then your shoe's uncomfortable because it's too big. That's, man, I guess, the answer.
I couldn't recommend it more. It's like one of the best projects you can do is just like getting your feet back in better shape.
Yeah.
By that, it's making better footwear choices, more barefoot. Like, fuck, it changes.
You have to sacrifice on the fashion side of things.
But not all the time. Like, you don't have to wear it when you're like going.
Just most of the day.
You just got to find sometimes, most in your day, like, you just got to try and eke it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And just do training for your feet. But, man, like, before I went on it, like, I could never run more than like 7-8 kilometers without getting shin splints, like, really quickly. Mm. And it's really only the major thing I've changed. If anything, I'm heavier Well, no, I am definitely heavier.
Yeah, you're heavier.
Which would normally put stress on it. I just think, yeah, it makes an unbelievable difference.
Oh, big difference. Yeah, big difference. All right, well, before we get into the listener questions, obviously this week, huge, obviously all the running volume I've been doing, I've been getting home and the end of the day, and like my legs ache. They actually ache from running and, you know, the functional fitness Project Body, Project Strong programming that I'm kind of sprinkling in on my usual training. My legs are honestly aching. I can't go to sleep some nights. And the only thing that has helped, I've tried some stretching, I've tried some deep breathing, some cool down. It's good for a little bit, but honestly, the only thing that's really been helping is my high-priced gun, my Hypervolt. So we've got the mid-range Hypervolt. Obviously, you've got the top-end Hypervolt, which is a little more powerful, Hypervolt Plus, and then you've got the slightly less powerful one, but the more inexpensive one, the Hypervolt Go. But Raf and I have the Hypervolt, just the original one. I put on the, it's got all these different attachments. I put on this specific attachment, which is kind of like deep tissue. And I just run it down my hamstrings, my calves, my quads. And it gives me, and my glutes, oh, the relief that it gives me from the aching. You know the aching where like you've go to the Easter show, you go to a festival and you're on your feet all day. And all you want to do is just sit down. Or
yeah,
sit
dude, when I used to work at the cinema.
Yeah.
10-hour shifts, not allowed to sit down.
Oh, bro, aching. That is like the feeling that I've been getting. I think it's just the combination. Like when you do a heavy leg day and then you try to go and do like 5-6 Ks, oh man, my body's just like not used to it. And it's the only thing that gives me relief. So it's been great, honestly, using that tool. Haven't really needed it much until the training volume has picked up. Mm. So if you're really that person that the training volume is quite high and you're training hard, having something like this, I mean, I don't think you'll use it all the time. But yeah, for when you need it, it just comes in at the best time. You're like, thank God I have this thing. You can't get a massage. Like, it's too inconvenient. No, book it.
The massage gun, I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
When I've like done a big run in the morning, just if I can just like sprinkle in some calves later in the day,
yeah,
it's game change.
Yeah, it takes some relief out of my back as well. So anyone that sits a lot during the day and does some lifting, their back gets tight and it's uncomfortable or something, then this is definitely the definitely what you want to do. So definitely check it out. We've made things really easy now with our sponsors. So you can go to themindmuscleproject.com/hyperice, where you can look at the discounts and the codes there. And that's going to be for all our sponsors. So it's just going to be our website slash whatever the sponsor's name is. No hyphens, all one word. And that is how you can find all the deals. So if you've forgotten something, if you've forgotten the code or the link or whatever it is to any of the partners of our page, that is where you guys can find it. themindmuscleproject.com/hyperice for this one. Cool. Listen to questions.
All right, first question, DSAS26. Do you think injuries are just a part of training regularly or an indication that something, for example, form, volume, recovery is off?
Mm.
That's a pretty good question. We've talked about it before. Injuries are always a part of training regularly. I don't think there's any way around it. Basically, no matter what you're training, as long as if you're trying to progress, it's basically a guarantee. I think, though, you can realize that it can be a guarantee of training regularly, and it can also be an indication that something is off. So it's not like you necessarily do something wrong, but it still is always some signal that something is off.
Mm.
It's not a signal that everything is perfect, right? Yeah. Whether that at the smallest end, it's just like, hey, you've ramped up your volume a little bit too quickly. Or it can be like, yeah, your form is totally off. It doesn't mean everything is wrong. It could just be one small thing is wrong, and then you get a pain signal from that.
Mm.
But no, like it's a guarantee. It doesn't mean like, yeah, it doesn't mean your whole program is off, but it can just be in one area, you haven't quite nailed everything.
I definitely think I've accepted that injuries are just a part of life, and it's less about preventing them totally than it's more about how well you can understand your body, how sensible and responsible you can be, and how well you can rehab them.
Yeah, well, if you want to train less hard, you can have less injuries in your life. No question.
Yeah.
I'm going to say you get to zero,
yeah,
but you can have less.
Yeah, I do find, though, that you can get a lot of injuries from not training enough as well. Like from just sitting around.
But I mean, if you just put all your programming into like prehab and rehab, and it's like the ultimate stretching routine and stuff, you can probably have less.
Yeah.
But if you want to like push it hard. Oh, you can have less
for sure. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a guarantee.
Yeah, definitely. I do think as well, there's like sometimes it's just could be the day, it could be the day before, the dehydration, the movement, something hasn't quite, you slept a bit funny or whatever, and you just go into something and you tweak something. I almost feel like sometimes that's unavoidable. Like one time, you know, I've had a client really good at strict press, you know, 60 kilos, couple reps, that sort of thing. One day they hurt their neck warming up the bar. You know, and it's like sometimes, and we did a shoulder warm up, we did the normal prep. Sometimes these things just happen, they're unavoidable. But it's like, how well can you manage it once it happens? How smart are you? Are you like, oh, it's a little injury, I'll just push you, and you just keep training on it, keep training on it? That was a mistake I made when I started getting into running late last year, is I was like, oh, knees really hurt, I'll just push you. I'll just do more strength training, I'll just push you. And it just never got better. And it wasn't until during the holidays, I probably took a good 2 weeks off running at all. Now I've come back, they feel fine. Like, yeah, obviously there's sometimes they feel a little bit sore, but a bit of rehab, bit of like, you know, massage gun, all that sort of stuff, and pretty much they feel fine. So yeah, I think you just really how you react to them, how smart
you are. Injuries is all attitude. And as you get older and more mature, you take like better attitudes to it and you work with them. People that have shitty attitudes, they just always seem to struggle with it.
Oh, look at the ultimate injury inspiration, Luke Starr. He dislocates his elbow at a comp snatching, like one of the worst injuries you've seen. He rehabs it, like iron will, puts his head down, rehabs it, you know, gets it strong again, and ends up, you know, back benching super heavy weights, snatching everything. He's probably clear of that injury, back to normal health for less than a month, snaps his Achilles playing social sport, right? And he's just like, I just got out of the longest rehab process, and now
I've got an even longer one.
It's like, man, he snapped the Achilles. Yeah. It's just a... And now he's back running again. I saw him running again. And even the doctor or the physician or whatever said to him, like, hey, this is one of the fastest rehabs I've seen. We talked about some of his rehab process just because he's so diligent with it and does it properly and he doesn't miss a day and that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's the attitude. He's like, man, I just got to put on the iron helmet again and just, you know, grit the teeth, bite down on the mouth guard and just do it again.
Some people are good at injuries.
Yeah.
Okay, Braun Athletics, how often, similar question, how often when to program rehab, prehab exercises for weak body parts like your feet, hip stabilizers, rotator cuff, etc.
I think you should always have those in your program. I don't think you need as much as what people think. They think, all right, cool, rotator strength. They write up 8 exercises, 3 sets of each. It takes like an hour to get through it. I think you just need the 80-20, the bang for buck here. So this is where you like really, I think, lock down some really good training protocols, really good strength protocols. Just keep it simple and just, you know, work through the... work through one or two major movements, good compound exercises that can help. Like, you know, for feet, maybe use barefoot calf raises. Right? For rotator cuff, maybe it's Cuban press, you know, full body sort of movement. So, you know, maybe for hips, it's, you know, a hip thrust, something like that, or a drinking bout. It doesn't have to be many things, but if you get really good at some good full movement compound kind of accessory exercises, you'll do most of the work. You'll get most of the way there. Especially if it's a weak body part. You'll bring it up pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. I reckon frequency and less volume is far better.
Yeah.
If you just watch any professional team, right, and my experiences in sport and well, obviously these guys have more time to train, right? So they're like more diligent. It's more on the line. So they tend to just do the boring stuff more often. They touch on this stuff like, you know, every day. Like, hey, here's my prehab warm-up exercise that I do that's important to me. And they kind of do that before every day's training. You know, it's not tons of it, but they touch on every day and it makes them feel good. You know, and I think that does lower injuries and it just... Yeah, it works better than just trying to crush it like one day a week. I do think frequency makes a main difference.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, say, when I did competitive swimming, we talked about this on an episode last week, the prehab and rehab exercises that we do with the bands before we did it, I was like, you know, external rotations and we do lat pull downs. We do a couple of different things and it took all up 5 minutes, but we did it every day.
Every day.
Every day, you know?
So I do reckon that's the way to go with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Giving It May All asks, what is your opinion on if and when a mixed grip deadlift is appropriate? In training, I see people use it as a default grip all the time. Should this only be used for heavier lifts when your grip is failing, or would other tools be better?
This is a good question. I like this question because it's something that...
People all the time grab an empty bar and
totally
mixed grip straight away. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying...
No, it's a bad thing.
It's something I notice.
No, it's a bad thing. So I was that guy, right? So I would mix grip from the first warm-up set, the empty bar, everything. And, you know, weight was never an issue for me. Had a big deadlifts, no problems. Here's where it started to become a problem. If you do it all the time, the difference between what muscles are working on the underhand grip versus the overhand side are very different. As a result, you start to create, especially if you start doing a lot of deadlifting, you create an imbalance in those muscle groups. And that imbalance will show up in other exercises and it will show up in injuries later. Often what happens if you watch someone that's only mixed grip for a very long time, the height in their shoulders and the activation between their rhomboids and their lats is very different on both sides, especially as the weights start to get heavier. Obviously, you run a risk, most people wouldn't run this risk, but you run a risk of snapping your bicep on the underhand side. That's how biceps snap in deadlifts. What it just shows you is that when you're deadlifting with an underhand grip, you are stressing the bicep side of... So, you're mostly stressing your bicep, not your lat. So, you're not protecting your bicep when
it's
you're...
It's harder to get your lat grip. Firing. Much harder.
Yeah. So, my recommendation, honestly, is the hook grip. I think it's better to go overhand. Keep yourself balanced when you're deadlifting.
You have long hands, though. Not everyone is like that.
Yeah, or straps.
Yeah, straps.
Yeah, or straps, yeah. Obviously, just double overhand without...
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Especially when the weights get heavier and you're doing reps. Like, I understand you need some kind of grip assistance. Or I would say use the mixed grip. Use it at very... like your top end sets when you absolutely need it. And mix the mixed grip. So if you're always left hand, underhand, mix it. Go right hand, underhand to help balance those things out. So it's not the worst tool in the world. And obviously, if I'm pulling max deadlift, I'm probably going hook grip, mixed grip, like double combo. Actually, no, I'm not. I don't do that anymore. But I would still, yeah, alternate the mixes as well.
Yeah, I think alternating the mixed grip is really good. The only exception I'll give was when I was getting coached on this, I did end up doing quite a few like empty bar sets working up with the mixed grip, but only really because I was just... And you do see this quite a lot with people that are trying to do it for some sort of competition or whatever, just like practicing it, trying to get things firing and everything in that mixed grip position so that when they get to the really heavy sets, they can get it right. So if you're like struggling with that, I think it can be worthwhile. But when you're just like putting in work just to generally train, yeah, you definitely... This is completely unnecessary at the lighter sets. But I remember I did have some issues for a while just trying to get my underhand grip like... Basically, my underhand grip was totally loose and my overhand grip was really tight. I was having a lot of trouble there. So, I spent a bit of time with the light weights trying to get that right. It did help at the end of CrossFit when I was like just trying to get them in heavy workouts. But overall, I think it happened because I did the mixed grip too often for too long. Actually, weightlifting improved it a lot because I started going to like overhand grip for my weightlifting stuff. And I noticed that it got my shoulders much better. Just because like for weightlifting, you can't mix your grip. Before that, I'd always done a mixed grip. So yeah, if you don't weightlift in particular and like all your heavy pulling is with a mixed grip, that's where you can get into the most issues.
I used to, when you used to do CrossFit workouts, like open workouts, say if there was like 21 deadlifts at 140 kilos, I would, between the sets, say I was going to break it up 7-7-7, I would alternate the sets of which grips I would mix because I knew I wanted to keep my grip fresh and I wanted to, yeah, preserve a hook grip a little bit more. But I would, go the first set, we'll go, you know, left hand underhand, then next set I would go right hand underhand, and that would just make sure that I wasn't fatiguing one muscle group side to side more than the other.
Yeah. It's one of the worst things when you see a dude. I've seen it quite a lot of times where they tear their bicep on the underhand grip.
And it rolls up.
Because the bicep just like flies up towards their face.
Oh, it's disgusting. Yeah, it's awful.
Okay, last question here. We have Dean Strawhan. I hate doing exercises with my face down or head below body level as I get lightheaded when I stand back up. I'm a poor breather. I tend to hold my breath. Would this be a breathing or blood pressure issue? I've always had normal blood pressure. How should I work around or through this? Head below his body.
So that'd be like handstand push-ups?
Yeah, maybe like ski erg when you go down.
Yeah. Maybe burpees? Yeah.
I mean, I've felt this in stuff like burpees before. There is a huge thing, which maybe he's getting at here. I'm not sure if he does like... functional fitness, but yeah, when your body is moving like that through space and your head's going up and down and it's like going below your body and above your body, some people don't seem to get it, but definitely some people get it worse than others. They get like seriously lightheaded, bloodshot eyes, and it's like hard for them to continue on with the session.
It could be a blood pressure thing, I don't know, but I know that if your body is an adaptation machine, so if you do struggle with those sort of things, like handstand holds and stuff is just a great simple way. Because you're just doing a handstand, you're not doing anything dynamic, you're just up there increasing the time that you're upside down. And the difference between, say, like when I got into that second lockdown and I was in, you know, basically in full handstand mode, I didn't have any equipment really. I was doing handstands every day. The first day of handstands, yeah, I felt like my head was going to pop. The last day, my head was fine.
Yeah.
Like
the difference is crazy.
Yeah, the capillaries and the blood flow network in your face, like it just conditions itself really quickly. So
first time you get up and do handstands, yeah, you literally feel like you're a tomato face.
Yeah.
And like within weeks, it's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a big difference. And I think it might just be more of an adaptation rather than just always finding yourself. You get into the workout and then it fucks you up. So anyway, all right, before we dive into our Netflix review this week, of course, if you guys are single, if you are looking to date, and you want to set preferences like your type of food that you eat, Are you, you know, flexitarian? Are you fish only? Are you macros, intermittent fasting, keto, paleo, vegan, whatever the preference is? If that really matters to you and you want to use it as a preference and save yourself time, you can do this on Fitify. And same thing, if you want to know what training styles you do, you know, if you're a runner, you never go to the gym, you probably want a running partner. You know, you probably don't want someone that's like, oh, hey, we'll go train. Cool, I'm going to the park, I'm going to the gym. It's like, maybe you want that, maybe you don't. But either way, you have the choice on Fitify. So Fitify is the modern dating app, mainly in Australia at the moment. So you can check it out. Again, I'll link to mymuscleproject.com/Fitify. You can see everything. And that's Fitafy.
And they're adding heaps of users. So if you went on it a few weeks ago, you could probably, maybe you got to the end of the swipes or whatever, you jump back on. Now there's tons more people on it because it's a brand new company.
Yeah, they're adding thousands of users every week. So there's a lot more people on there. And obviously, that's the most important thing, is that
choice. You know, all about choice.
That's right. So head on the mymuscleproject.com/Fitify. Okay, so this week, I guess it's sort of like a documentary. It's not really. It's a docudrama, I guess is what they call it. It's like, it's a true story.
It's a movie, based on a true story.
Yeah. Oh, I think maybe a docudrama is more, I guess this is a recreation. Mm. This is a drama. It's just a recreation of true events, but very true events. And this movie is called Green Book. It's about a kind of an odd friendship, I guess what the whole movie is about. I guess I'd call him a head security guard set in the 60s, this movie?
I think it's the late
60s. A head security guard at New York nightclubs, an Italian guy, and a black pianist, one of the best pianists in the country, end up doing a tour together. So the security guy is hired to protect the black pianist because they are doing a tour, like a music tour through the deep south of America, which during the 1960s as a black pianist is super high risk. You know, they even got it's almost like the black man's guide to America, and there's like hotels and motels and stuff that only they can stay in because it's only safe for them to stay in, because like obviously they don't allow what they call in the, you know, back then colored people to stay where white people stay. You know, and so it's really interesting. The movie's a lot about their friendship, and it's got some really cool lessons in there. And it's also about kind of the racism and history in America and stuff like that, and the music industry back then. And it kind of walks you through that whole process. But I think it's an absolutely incredible movie. I really enjoyed it. I think it won a few awards or got nominated for a few Oscars or something.
Yeah, it looks like it's won a bunch of awards. It's like, what, I think a couple years old?
Yeah.
But it's like brand new to
Netflix.
Brand new to Netflix.
Yeah.
I've got nearly an hour in. It's a fucking long movie, so you need to like settle yourself into this.
Well, it's a normal length movie for something that's really good.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, man, it's really good. Like the acting is mad, and they just like recreate the time really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the acting's really good. They chose some really good actors. They do the accents really well.
Yeah, accents are amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's in a movie like this.
And also because we went to that part of America, like the Italian sort of accent. I was like, okay, now I can verify this.
Yeah, yeah. So, Green Book's a great movie. I don't want to spoil the whole plot, but it's definitely, definitely a worthwhile one. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, from what I watched so far, I'll give it a 4 out of 5. It was like actually really good.
It's been good because honestly, we have not given a rating of 3 in a few weeks. So. Really,
no, but the content on Netflix sucks. It actually sucks. It does. Like, they can't make anything.
Yeah.
It's this ultimately COVID horrific combination of you can't make anything good except that minimalist movie.
Yeah.
It's obviously like on the worst budget ever. And then people are watching more.
Yeah. Yeah.
The perfect storm.
Yeah. So Green Book, actually something good on Netflix one. So guys, go check it out. All right. That's it. We've got a bunch of programs. We've got one program on sale this month. It's called Monthly Madness. Is that what it's called, Connor? Monthly Mayhem. Where every month we put one of our programs on sale. So this month it's Project Body. So if you're looking to be as aesthetic as Raf, then you go to mymuscleproject.com/body. So if you want to check out...
Results may vary.
not as good as Raf. So if you want to if you want to get on a program that we've designed specifically for aesthetics and strength training combined, you've got it on our app. Obviously, all the videos are on there, the interactive videos. You've got the online community on there. And it all works super well and it's super affordable. So it's on sale right now, just for the month of January, and that's the mymuscleproject.com/body. All right, thanks so much, folks. We'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, The My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.